Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Republican senators call out President Trump, opioids front and center, JFK files, dossier talk into GOP plan, tax plan comes near. Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake denounced the president's ways in a stunning speech on the Senate floor Tuesday.
We must stop pretending that the degradation of our politics and the conduct of some in our executive branch are normal. They are not normal.
President Trump stopped short of declaring a national emergency on opioids, but called for an end to the epidemic.
We can be the generation that ends the opioid epidemic. We can do it.
And the House narrowly passed the Senate's 2018 budget resolution, clearing the way for Republicans to try to pass tax cuts without Democrat support. Here was House Speaker Paul Ryan.
This was an enormous step in the direction toward getting comprehensive tax reform and tax cuts for middle-class families over the line, into law. Done.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Kai Wingfield, Lisa Desjardins, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. We are broadcasting today from the downtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting, where we've landed this week on our On Point national listening tour. Our thanks to Georgia Public for hosting us today. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you see coming on taxes? What do you make of the urgent warnings from the president? Or on the president from Senators Flake and Corker. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us today from Columbia, South Carolina, is Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thanks for being here today.
Wonderful being here. Thanks, Tom.
With me in the studio at Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta is Kyle Wingfield, conservative columnist, that's his title, for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Kyle, great to have you with us here.
Yeah, it's great to be here today. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And with us from Boston, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Lisa, and Kyle.
Let's go right to the taxes if we can. All kinds of news flying around this week, but Republicans trying to keep their eye on the ball of big tax cuts. Tax reform, I don't know. Tax cuts, almost certainly if they can muster the votes. Here was Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Capitol Hill this week saying, no distractions.
If there's anything that unifies Republicans, it's tax reform. We've been looking for the opportunity to do this literally for years. We now have a president who will sign it, who believes in what we're trying to do, and we're going to concentrate on what our agenda is and not any of these other distractions that you all may be interested in.
Well, a lot of people interested in what you might call distractions. There's a lot of news out there. Kyle Wingfield, you're watching this from Atlanta. Does this look like a package that Republicans can get across the line? They've got a budget now, so they can do it under resolution rules, which means they only need a majority. They don't have to get that filibuster-proof 60 votes. But there has been dissent in the ranks. It was a close vote in the House yesterday that got that budget up on the rails. How does it look to you, Kyle?
Well, I think the key is going to be what we see next week when the bill comes out from the House and what all is in it. I think that's why we've had this delay getting to this point, because we saw with the health care reform efforts that not being on the same page as a caucus
yep.
cost them dearly once they got to the Senate. So I think they are trying to hash that out before they get to that point.
Lisa, there were some big sticking points this week. I mean, this is a plan that will, I don't know what the right phrase, blow a $1.5 trillion hole, I mean, add to the deficit by that amount. If it goes over that, they can't do it under these special rules that allow them to get it passed without Democratic support. That means they can't only cut taxes. They have to find a place for new revenues as well. And that, I guess this week, Lisa, has been the rub.
That's exactly right. It's something that's referred to as SALT, that refers to as that's state and local taxes, for which most Americans get a deduction now on their tax bill. Whatever you pay your state, you get to deduct from your federal taxes. That's, of course, the biggest benefit for states with high taxes like New Jersey, New York. Those states happen to have a lot of Republicans in them still. Mm-hmm. Those Republicans mostly voted no on this. There were 20 Republicans who voted no yesterday. Some of those also voted no because they're worried about the deficit. Those are two big problems that have not been addressed yet, and we expect the outline, more details of a tax plan within days. It's not clear how Republicans are going to resolve these concerns.
Lisa, there was also a lot of talk this week about 401ks. Mm. The administration has talked a lot about helping the middle class. This, of course, is something that many people use, if they can afford it, to try and save for retirement. Right now, you can, hold $18,000, I think, out tax-free annually. And that they were talking about cutting that down to $2,400. That's a big whack down. Mm. And they got resistance right there from President Trump himself. But they need revenue from somewhere. What about on this point? The president says no. Kevin Brady, who's right in the middle of this in Congress, says kind of maybe. Does this have a chance to go forward or not, Lisa?
Yes, I was at that breakfast where Kevin Brady said, we still want to talk about changing what you can deduct for the 401ks. And then the president later said, well, maybe we will negotiate it. It is certainly something that's on the table, and it's something Americans have to watch closely. What Republicans like Kevin Brady say they want is they want to reduce the amount that is tax-free right now, but then perhaps you wouldn't have to pay taxes on the other end when you actually take the money out of your 401k down the road. Now, my question about that is, how does that square with their other goal of saying we want more Americans, younger Americans, to start saving for retirement? Well, if the kind of incentive is 40 years down the road, I don't know how that encourages younger Americans, which is what Mr. Brady says he wants to do. It's certainly something, again, that's unresolved. And we've already addressed three big issues for Republicans, never mind the dozens of exemptions that they're trying to take out of the tax code because they think it's too complicated and unnecessary. Each of those exemptions has, of course, its own population that's pulling for it.
Kyle, what about this 401k front? I mean, years ago, when pension plans, company pension plans started falling apart and getting withdrawn, this is what was put forward, saying, no, you won't have a guaranteed pension, but here you can save. And many people really worked hard to try to do that. Does this make political sense? Is it fair for Republicans to whack that down now when that's one of the primary ways Americans, with mixed success, I must say, try to save for retirement?
Yeah, I think if there's one element that you could see the biggest pushback from Republican voters, Republican rank and file members, this is going to be it. Because, what does the Republican Party say? They want more people saving for their own retirement.
Yeah.
They want more people not relying on the government when they get to their older age. So this does seem to be at cross purposes with this. I understood Kevin Brady to say that he wants to come up with something that would work better, that he doesn't feel like the current system is encouraging enough people to save enough money. So I think the key will be, does he have a substitute for mm-hmm. what we have now that most people look at and say, okay, yeah, that would make me save more money for retirement? Or if it is just this shift, then as Lisa was saying, I'm not sure that most people think long range enough to take advantage of that and see that as a better option.
And it looks as though it would move revenues forward to help them close that deficit that they're expanding here, but it would deepen the chasm in the out years when those 401ks would have been taxed.
You would definitely have to worry that would be the case.
I mean, Jack, let's listen to the Democrats for a second here. They're not buying the whole case that this is a middle-class tax cut. Here was Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer saying Republicans are lying about what's in the tax bill.
Untruth one, it's aimed at helping the middle class. Untruth two, it's not a plan for the rich. Untruth three, it lowers the deficit. This plan is a disaster for America.
Jack Beatty, I mean, the Democrats, I guess, are counting on most or all of them not voting for it anyway. But what about the Democrats' characterization of what's coming down the pike here?
Well, on the charge that it's a boon for the rich, we just talked about the necessity of, ending benefits for the middle class to make way for tax cuts that, according to one study, would give Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, $5 million more a year. that would be worth...
She's a billionaire. Like
yeah, she's a billionaire. That would be worth $17 million a year to Jared Kushner, and that could save the Trump family more than $1 billion. This is would be in the estate tax. So we're talking about cutting, limiting 401ks for the middle class to make tax cuts for the likes of the Bush, of the Trump cabinet and the Trump family. And the public isn't buying it. I mean, polling on this is it's reminiscent, really, of the polling you saw for the Republican dismantlement of Obamacare. 3/4 of Americans want taxes raised on the rich, not cut. Majorities want taxes raised on corporations, not lowered. And only 28% support what's known thus far of the tax plan. So it seems to be unpopular, yet the Republicans are dead set on doing it because they have to show, and really a lot of this is donor maintenance, they have to show really the funders of their party, first of all, that they are following through on their commitments to cut taxes for them.
Kyle, what do you say?
Yeah, I think one caution I'd throw there is the studies that show those sorts of things are making a lot of assumptions about what's going to be in the final bill. I mean, we don't even know where the brackets are going to begin and end. We know that the framework...
Tax rates at different income levels.
That's right. Does the 10% bracket go to zero, or does it go to partway, does part of it go to 12? You know, we don't know those sorts of things yet to be able to game out how it's going to affect individuals or groups. And the other thing that the framework left as an option is leaving the top tax rate where it is. So we don't know if they're going to do that or if they're going to drop it to 35 as was contemplated in the framework.
They matter.
Yeah, they matter.
We're not
going to
know for long here before this goes to a vote. I mean, we're talking a rocket ship here. They want this done, I heard, by Thanksgiving, John Cornyn saying.
Yeah, I think it's the bill unveiled on November 1st, markup beginning on the 6th, and they're going to try to get it out of the House by the end of the month. So it'll be quick, but it's a little bit more of that legislative procedure that we didn't see with health care.
Is it reasonable to you that such a vast tax overhaul should be pushed through with its details known only for a couple of weeks before we start voting?
I think most of these concepts are things we've talked about before.
It's the difference between concept and
that's
fact,
true.
Right?
That's true. And it's very important, as I just said, to see the mm-hmm. details. But it's not like we're talking about completely different new ideas that haven't been discussed and analyzed.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, Republican hits on the president, the way cleared for a tax bill, the opioid emergency, Democrats, Republicans, and the Trump dossier, a Wall Street win on consumer protection. We'll look at that. Xi Jinping in the saddle, high in the saddle in China. We are broadcasting today from the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. And Kyle Wingfield is with us. He's columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Lisa Desjardins is with us from the PBS NewsHour today out of Columbia, South Carolina. Jack Beatty is with us from Boston. And you can join us. What did you hear on taxes this week? What did you hear in the... sort of very unusual, rare denunciations of the president from, we had President George W. Bush last week, there's been John McCain out there, Bob Corker this week saying the president has debased the country, Jeff Flake talking about reckless, dangerous behavior at the top of our government. And Kyle, Lisa, Jack, lots of calls on taxes first. Gerald in Erie, Pennsylvania. Gerald, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Jerry Beamer and from Erie. I'm basically calling because I believe the big lie here is that this is all to get a 15% corporate tax rate, which will make us more competitive internationally. The fact is that, or 20% tax rate.
Yeah.
The fact is we already have a 15% tax rate if you consider all the loopholes, which makes us competitive.
So what's it all about then, Jerry? If you don't buy the corporate tax side of it, what's it about?
this is what the Republicans, I listen to CNBC also, this is what the Republicans have been drooling to do with the support of big money coming from the 1% who already control so much of the money. The disparity between the very wealthy and the very poor and the middle class has become so much greater in my lifetime. I'm 67 years old.
Yeah, well, that's true.
This is a sham. It's a sham. And they're taking, if you think about what you've already talked about, the fact that they're going to tax the 401ks, that would be $4,500, something like that, per person that they're going to put taxes on from their gross income.
Jerry, we've got it, and we'll see. We'll see where the details end up. I mean, they're wrestling with that. They're looking for some revenue to bring here alongside the cuts, but we take your big critique. You're not buying it. And let me thank you for your call, Jerry. David in Brockton, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. I see the Trump administration and the Republican GOP party steamrolling through Congress, and essentially this bill will pass, and it will be the best thing to ever happen to the American middle class.
Tell us why. We want to hear why, David.
Trump is an amazing individual. He's a tremendous businessman. He has a tremendous heart for the American middle class people. And as a result of that, we have full faith in him that once this bill passes, regardless of the details, I have full faith and confidence that it will be the best tax cut ever brought to the middle class American in history.
And David, I mean, you've got people analyzing it so far, and we'll see where it ends up. But the first deep analysis says that the overwhelming volume of the benefits are going to go to the wealthy. Is that all right with you? Do you believe that will somehow come back to the middle class to its benefit?
That's a great hypothetical question, Tom. And by the way, I can't thank you enough for what you do. I love your radio show. I wanted to tell you that. It's a hypothetical question, Tom.
It's not so hypothetical, David. I mean, it's not so hypothetical. They're saying that's where the biggest, you know, bang by far is going to be here. Do you trust that it'll come back to the benefit of the middle class somehow?
Oh, of course it will. If you look at what Trump's done already, the stock market's made tremendous gains. He's paid down the national deficit by trillions of dollars, and he is just getting started. So
the stock market's up, no question about that. Pay down the deficit. By no means. I mean, we're talking about huge deficit. This would make it bigger over time. This would blow a big hole over time. But David, I hear your faith and I hear your trust, and that in itself is really interesting. Let me get one more, and I'll take it to our panel, Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
You know, Tom, the Republican Party proved us that what I've already known for years, that they are the evil evangelical hypocrites that I thought them to be when they supported a man who stands for nothing that Christ would even look like. Then now they are, you know, they've been claiming for years to be fiscal hawks. They're fiscal conservatives.
Yeah.
Until it stands in the way of tax reform for rich people and tax breaks for rich people. They are really just showing what they've been for and what they're all about. And if you keep on having guys like that caller keep supporting them, this is what we'll get. We will get the government that we deserve as long as people keep supporting evangelical hypocrites and fiscal frauds. That's what they are. That's what they've always been.
Carl, we've got it. And Lord knows there's been a lot of talk about deficits, and with the GOP's championing minimizing those deficits for a long time. I mean, Kyle, you're a conservative. How do you look at this? Do you have the faith of our second caller there that somehow this is all going to work out to the economic benefit of the people, including the middle class? And what about the deficits we're talking about here from a party that totally wrapped itself around refusing those deficits, you know, brought us to government shutdown and all the rest over the years? You've seen that.
Yeah, again, I'm withholding judgment on the plan until I see those details, because I think they will make the difference.
Is that really fair? You're a smart guy. You're watching here. You can see the broad outline. I mean, the details, they're trying to make it fit, but you can see the outline of what it's not going to be vastly different from the numbers that are projected.
Well, again, I think it depends on where those rates and brackets go will be, and you know, what they do with the child tax credit and some things like that, what they end up doing on 401ks or not doing. I think that's where it'll swing. You know, it is somewhat safe to forecast that higher earners will get most of the benefit because higher earners pay most of the income tax in this country. And the income tax is not the only tax the federal government collects, of course. But when it comes to that particular one, that's where most of the tax burden is born. So we're going to see that.
As far as the pass-through here, I mean, people who make their money off stocks are going to make a lot more private equity. There's going to be, whoopee-tuya-tuya-ay here.
Yeah. But in terms of deficits, what I would like to see is, and there have been a number of people on the right talk about this and write about this. What I want to see is really more reform than cuts. I want to see the incentives that are in the tax code shaped more toward growth, and I'm less worried about making sure that it cuts tax revenues because we do have a debt problem. We do have deficit problems. And I think you can adjust some of those rates and some of those, you call them loopholes if you don't like them or incentives if you do, I think, in the tax code. You can adjust some of those so that it does spur more growth, which is what the economy really needs. And I think you can do that without focusing on making sure you reduce revenues. I think you want to keep revenues fairly close to where they are because this Congress is not proving very skilled at cutting spending, so we're not going to see that offsetting any revenue cuts.
It's going to be a tough hill to climb. The deficit for the fiscal year that ended in September, $666 billion, 666 right there, $80 billion up from the previous year, and now we're heading into more tax cut territory. We will see where that goes. We'll talk about that right here again on Monday. I've got to turn to Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, John McCain out there, of course, President George W. Bush last week, Republican after Republican coming down really hard with profound critiques of this president. Denunciations, not too strong a word. Here was Flake on the Senate floor on Tuesday. The whole country eventually tuned in.
We must never meekly accept the daily sundering of our country. The personal attacks, the threats against principles, freedoms and institution, the flagrant disregard for truth and decency.
And he's talking right from the top here and more, talking about reckless, outrageous, undignified behavior, dangerous to democracy.
Reckless, outrageous, and undignified behavior has become excused and countenanced as telling it like it is, when it is actually just reckless, outrageous, and undignified. And when such behavior emanates from the top of our government, it is something else. It is dangerous to a democracy.
Lisa Desjardins, we have been in a very unusual period here. Bob Corker talking about the president debasing the nation. We hear Jeff Flake right there, John McCain, President Bush. How is all this hitting home in Washington, or is it, Lisa? I mean, we're reading other reports here that, look, it's the president's GOP now, and they're just going to roll with him, despite this kind of fervent alarm from members of their own party.
I know we so often want to see big moments saying, oh, this is a demarcation line. Everything changes now because of the Jeff Flake speech. I'm not sure that's the case, but I do think something has changed, to answer your question. And it changed this week with the Flake speech and with, as you say, Bob Corker, who said this is an utterly untruthful president on Twitter about a president of his own party. That is astounding. You think about the Jeff Flake speech. It was 17 minutes long. And what it was doing, what he was trying to do there was trying to push back against the last 17 months of Republican politics and particularly Donald Trump politics. Now, those roots go much farther back. And here was an interesting statement from a man who said, it's time to fight. It's time to speak up. But yet at the same time, he's getting out of the fight. I spoke to another Republican who's retiring. There's a wave of them, not just Jeff Flake. We're also seeing people like Ileana Ross-Lehtinen in the House and Charlie Dent in the House leaving. And speaking to members like that, they told me they just don't want to have to defend this president anymore on the campaign trail. Now, that's a decision they're making. But meanwhile, the fight for the Republican Party is heating up more than ever. And honestly, Tom, it's about to be open war. We now know that McConnell's basically leadership fund, the leadership fund that supports Mitch McConnell, announced that it will go after Steve Bannon and all of the candidates who embrace him, including the woman who was Jeff Flake's opponent. She's still running. And they said they were going to call him anti-Semitic. They already did it in a tweet. They're going to highlight his white nationalism. They said they're going to try and go toe-to-toe with these other Republican candidates. That's open war that we haven't seen before in the Republican Party. It's a real test for them.
Kyle, first to the Flake and Corker critiques. On their face, what do you say to them?
Well, I think he's saying things that a lot of people, even on the right side of the spectrum, believe. You know, that even if you agree with the overall goals of the Trump administration, you can still look at the way that he goes about his business and at a minimum think that he's not helping his own agenda because he's creating those distractions that the Mitch McConnell we heard earlier talked about not wanting to get bogged down with. But then if you move beyond that, you know, there are a lot of us who look at that and we say, you know, that's not what we want out of our president, and it's time for him to start acting more like what we're accustomed to.
How do you put all that together as a Republican, as a conservative? On the one hand, there are the goals, and we hear a lot about that. And of course, Republicans, there's a lot of things they've wanted to do. But here are Republicans saying this man is debasing the country. He's a danger to democracy. He may take, as Bob Corker said, to World War III, and it's adult daycare over there, and it's dangerous. Now, Republican conservatives had not normally been known for wanting to take the country straight into danger. So can you just say, never mind, and let's go for the goals? Doesn't that mean you don't believe it's really dangerous?
Well, no, I don't think it means that. The way I look at it is politically, we heard all this talk last year. We heard it during the primary. We heard it during the general election. And Donald Trump won both times anyway. So
does that mean everything's okay?
It doesn't mean everything's okay, but I think it does mean you have to look as Republicans and say, all right, talking this way didn't really change anything before. Mm-hmm. What would actually change? And I do think that if his rhetoric, if his Twitter fights and everything eventually come to be seen as preventing that agenda from getting done, maybe that's where people start to change their minds about this president and say, okay, he's not telling it like it is. He's running a chaotic administration, and I wanted tax reform. I wanted Obamacare to be repealed. I wanted all these things, and they're not happening, and he's not helping. He's as much a part of the problem as anything else, because nothing else over the past year and a half has derailed him so far. So maybe that would be what it takes.
Jack Beatty, that is an awkward position for the Republican Party to be in. We want these tax cuts. So, I mean, if you take Flake and Corker at face value and more, the president's putting the country in danger, but we want the tax cuts, so we're going to stick with it.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a high-minded moment for the Republican Party.
And well, but they seriously want those tax cuts.
Oh, yes.
But then how do you put that up against danger to the if you believe it?
Exactly. I mean, if this is a threat to the national security, then they have to be act. They have to mobilize. You know, this week Tom Friedman said his solution to the problem was for the bruited suicide pact among Mattis, Tillerson, McMaster. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, that there was a talk.
I don't think those are suicide guys.
No. There was a talk. There was talk a couple of weeks ago that they would to get the president to conform to what Kyle says would be normal presidential behavior, that they would confront him with a "we will resign en masse," and that if Tillerson would be fired, they would say "we will resign en masse." And
any sign of that?
No, but as I say, Tom Friedman said that's his answer. They need to sort of recognize, as he said, that especially the military men, that they can't be, and using his phrase, cleaning up his messes every morning with their uniforms. They've got to be able to say, "You've got to change," and here's how to do it. That thesis suffers from an infirmity. General Kelly seems to be himself now succumbing to the Trump easy way with the truth.
Lisa, I mean, the fact is, we've got the Times reporting here that it looks the other way, that the GOP is bending toward the president in spite of these critiques. And critics, the headline here, are either giving in or giving up.
Well, I think you have to remember the president, by the nature of his power in the Constitution, is the single most powerful lawmaker in this country. To get anything to become law, especially with the numbers that the Republicans have in the Senate, they need the president to be on board. The president obviously has realized this. He's obviously going to use that power to negotiate behind the scenes and, I think, to keep his own Republicans guessing, to wonder if he's going to side with Democrats on some tax reform issues. Is he going to cut deals with the Democrats? Democrats, especially as we approach a slew of incredible deadlines in December, not just on tax reform. Mm-hmm. This is four-dimensional chess right now. We're talking about tax reform, which I think is right because it's the thing that could affect Americans the most for the long term. But it is part of a very complicated tapestry that the president is weaving in a way that no one quite sees the pattern. And I think that's what the president wants. That's the trick here. And I think next week when we see the exact numbers on what the tax rates are for which Americans, that will make a big difference because each American can say, here is exactly how I will be affected. And by the way, Republicans not guaranteeing that everyone's tax rate will go down.
Kyle, I mean, what a moment. Just got a couple of seconds here. But the GOP, Mitch McConnell's crew going after Steve Bannon as a white nationalist, is this good for the Republican Party?
I don't think infighting in a party can ever be good for it. Competition is one thing, but this sort of at-your-throats infighting is something altogether different.
Well, it's at your throat right now. Kyle Wingfield with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution joining us here in Atlanta at Georgia Public Broadcasting. We're glad you're here. Lisa Desjardins with PBS NewsHour. Jack Beatty, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, on Wednesday, late night host Jimmy Kimmel went after President Trump for tweeting that a recent meeting with GOP senators was a love fest with standing ovations.
Who wants to be the one to tell them that people are required to stand when the president enters a room? That's not an accomplishment. That's like saying every time I walk into a Starbucks, guy behind the counter asks me if I want coffee.
Well, I don't know if that's quite fair. Maybe more than one. Maybe not just when he walked in. In a week thick with harassment charges, former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly said on her NBC morning show Monday that sexual harassment of women must stop.
This must stop. The abuse of women, the shaming of them, the threatening, the retaliation, the silencing of them after the fact. It has to stop.
I don't know about that stopping, but the parade of men charged with sexual harassment just grows and grows this weekend. Fats Domino, the piano-playing prodigy with a soundtrack that blended rock and blues, died Tuesday at the age of 89. Here's his 1956 hit, Blueberry Hill.
I found my thrill.
Wow, sounds like simpler times. Of course, that was Red Scare times and all the rest. Are there simpler times? I don't know. We're looking at a week in the news. It's 2017 now, a long time since Blueberry Hill. Republican hits on the president this week, the way cleared for a tax bill, the opioid emergency the president's talking about, Democrats, Republicans, and the Trump dossier. We'll look at that. A Wall Street win on consumer protection. Over in China, big deal. Xi Jinping, tall in the saddle there, could be in power for a long, long time as China looks to design becoming number one on the planet. What are we doing here? With Kyle Wingfield, we're here in Atlanta this week at Georgia Public Broadcasting, and Kyle is columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Lisa Desjardins joins us. She's correspondent for the PBS NewsHour with us today from Columbia, South Carolina. Jack Beatty, our on-point news analyst, is with us out of Boston, and you can join us on the opioid kind of emergency that the president declared this week, on the Senate stripping consumer protections against big banks. What are you thinking on the origins of the Trump dossier, the Republican role, the Clinton role? What about Trump? The Trump campaign's seeking Hillary dirt from WikiLeaks? How do you feel about that? What do you make of the ongoing Gold Star Mothers drama of General Mattis in the Korean DMZ, of the drumbeat now of men being called out for harassment, the JFK files? The president this week saying, hey, indecent, whatever. It's the press making me out as uncivil. Here he was on the White House, the South Lawn.
I think the press makes me more uncivil than I am. You know, people don't understand. I went to an Ivy League college. I was a nice student. I did very well. I'm a very intelligent person.
Okay, let's hear from callers. Atlanta, Claudette is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Claudette, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd just like to say that I agree with Senator Flake and the former presidents who have spoken out against the behavior of Donald Trump. This man is trying to destroy democracy. And what I'd like to say to the Republicans is that, number one, they need to take the moral high ground And also remember that evil prevails when good people do nothing or say nothing. And to accept this man's behavior as normal is against everything that we believe in as far as being Americans. But it's a warning shot, and people must listen to them and act.
Claudette, we've got it loud and clear. I mean, they were heard. Listening is another thing. Action's another thing entirely. And big agendas here, but we hear your view very clearly. Let me get one more, if I may. North Carolina, Concord. Doris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say that I applaud Senators Flake and Corker and am grateful to Presidents Bush and Obama. But Senators Corker and Flake could have done something this week they did not do. If they're so concerned about bipartisanship and showing democracy, they could have blocked that tax resolution, which would have forced a 60-vote requirement.
But they're for it. That's the thing here, Doris. You know, Jeff Flake has been pretty much right in line with the president on policy. He was very much a conservative. He's not against this. He's against the president himself and the way he's handling the office. He says where he's taking the country.
But if he's against the president and the office, then you and I both know that actions speak. And sometimes you have to go against your own views for the betterment of the country. These people are about party and power, Tom, not about our country. And that's what breaks my heart. I am 66 years old. I lived through all the assassinations of the Kennedys and Martin Luther King. Mm. I've seen all of that. And when I look at this now, it breaks my heart.
Boy, we hear that. It's going to be fascinating to watch these two senators in particular as these bills come forward now, where their votes will be critical to the very president and the very the president, anyway, that they've been condemning. One more, and we'll talk about it. Baltimore, Steve is calling. Hi, Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
I just want to talk about this idea that there's this line of demarcation, you know, before Jeff Flake, after Jeff Flake, before Bob Corker, after Bob Corker. We need to acknowledge that Donald Trump is not some anomaly in the Republican Party. The Republican Party created Donald Trump. This is the party that created welfare queens, the party that ran on the Southern strategy, the party that talks about women on birth control like they're sluts. This is the party that has been dog whistling Donald Trump's ideas for decades. And finally, the voters got sick of the dog whistles and they wanted a man who just came out and said it. So if you want to talk about where that demarcation is going to be, it's not when Republicans say, oh, I'm enough. It's enough of this. I'm fed up. I can't take it anymore. It's when Republicans say, you know what? This is our problem. We created this. We're going to take responsibility for creating Donald Trump, and we're going to change the way that we talk about America. Thank you, Tom.
Steve, thank you, Steve. Kyle Winfield, you're conservative columnist. It's your title at the Atlantic Journal-Constitution. Did you and your peeps create Donald Trump?
I would like to think that I didn't have anything to do with creating Donald Trump. There were a number of us who are on that side of the spectrum who spoke out against him in the primary, wrote that he was not the right person for the Republicans to run, not just in the short-term consideration of the election, but for what he would mean for the party long-term.
Steve says it's the way the party has pursued its politics over time that sort of paved the way. I mean, now, you know, we've got Mitch McConnell. Maybe they're going to try and draw a line between Steve Bannon and Donald Trump. Say Steve Bannon's the white nationalist, the president's okay, but I don't know if people are going to buy that. But that's the deeper themes that Steve's pointing at here and saying the Republicans were played too loose with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree with that a little bit just because, we're talking about going decades back in some of these cases, and it just took until 2016 for this to come to fruition. We talked about him as an aberration because there weren't a lot of people, certainly in elected office as Republicans, who you could point to and say, you know, there were forerunners of Trump.
That's a long, long record. That's a pretty big statement. There's been a lot said over the years. I'm going to let that stand right there, though. The call from Baltimore from Steve saying, take responsibility. Republicans saying, we've got an agenda this week, and we want to get straight on it. I mean, Ted Cruz and others out there saying, you know, forget everything else. Just get this tax plan passed. Got to turn to opioids. It is a big deal in this country, taking a lot of lives every day. President Trump talking about this week. He didn't declare a national emergency, which would have its own implications on funding, but he did declare a public health emergency. And what federal agencies encouraged to direct more grant money to combating the epidemic. Here he was in the East Room of the White House.
Our current addiction crisis, and especially the epidemic of opioid deaths, will get worse before it gets better. But get better it will. It will take many years and even decades to address this scourge in our society. But we must start in earnest now to combat national health emergency.
And he talked personally here about his own brother, Fred Trump Jr., who struggled with alcoholism and died at age 43. The president said he learned about addiction from Fred.
He really helped me. I had somebody that guided me. And he had a very, very, very tough life because of alcohol. Believe me, very, very tough, tough life. He was a strong guy, but it was a tough, tough thing that he was going through. But I learned because of Fred.
So the president seen something about addiction, Lisa Desjardins, right in his own family. Of course, many people have. But what about this week? He said over the summer it's a national emergency, but that turns out that wasn't a formal declaration. Now we've got this national public health emergency. What are the implications of that? Is this, in fact, not just rhetoric, a big new attack on the epidemic problem?
This declaration does, in fact, open doors for funding. But the thing is that it doesn't actually send the funding yet. The president's decided to use the public health emergency declaration versus his other option, which was to call this a national disaster declaration, for many reasons. One is people think that fits better because this is, by and large, a health emergency. However, one issue for those on the front lines of this is that they need funding now. A disaster declaration would have allowed them to access some of that disaster money that's in the pot versus the public health emergency funds. Tom, right now that fund only has $57,000 in it in total. Whoa. So the president now has to ask for more money. So he's got the window open, but there's no money moving through it yet. Congress still has to approve money to really help these states. You know, we talk about a lot of times you think of West Virginia, New Hampshire, maybe Pennsylvania, the Rust Belt. But, you know, here in South Carolina, where I am today, they've seen a doubling of the problem here. They've had more opioid-related deaths in recent years than they have had homicides. So it's a national emergency. This is sort of a step toward dealing with it, but it's not clear when the funding will actually get in the hands of the people fighting it.
Kyle, serious new moves against the opioid epidemic here or not? What do you see?
Yeah, I think it's the appropriate thing to do. And when we talk about that disaster money that might have been available, we have to also recognize that we're still dealing from that, you know, perspective from the aftermath of Hurricanes Harvey and Irma and Maria, and there are a lot of demands on that money. I think it's more appropriate for Congress to take a look at a different appropriation for this. I think it is something that they should do, but I think that for that reason, this is the right way to go about it.
Jack, what do you say? Scale of problem, scale of response.
Senator Markey says this is a Band-Aid for a problem that needs a tourniquet, and he recommends a $41 billion federal program. You know, Ed Luce, the outstanding columnist for Financial Times, I think has the master generalization of the Trump era. He says Trump policies are likely to perpetuate the conditions that gave rise to Trumpism. Thus, on taxes, the policies are likely to exacerbate inequality, the inequality between the center of the country and the coast, the inequality between rural and urban, and the opioid epidemic. Here, the president seems to be throwing words at this crucial problem, and yet we have seen from studies that one of the mortality rate among white middle class Americans is actually rising, which is unheard of. And this partly because of opioids, partly because of the despair of their life chances in a world that's exploding inequality. But in any case, it doesn't appear that this policy will ameliorate the opioid crisis.
Well, we can hope something happens here. We're looking at a week in the news. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Congress this week acting the Senate on what the consumers would have been allowed to band together to bring class action suits against companies, banks like Wells Fargo, who had done something wrong, instead of having to go at them one after another under arbitration. Senate said, no, that's not going to happen. That was a big gift to the banks. They don't want that kind of class action suit against them. And then we had lots of talk this week about the Trump dossier and who financed that. Reports coming out that it was an unnamed Republican. We'll see if that eventually comes forward. And then the Clinton camp that took up the financing of that. Hear from an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper yesterday, former Hillary Clinton campaign secretary Brian Fallon defending the Clinton campaign and the DNC that they helped fund research that resulted in that now infamous, famous dossier with allegations about President Trump's connections to Russia, behavior in Moscow. Fallon also said that during the campaign, he wasn't aware that the law firm doing the research for the document had been hired.
I'm not sure who was part of that conversation at that time that gave the green light and said, let's
somebody
do
in the DNC or the
yes, clearly
had to know.
And whoever that person is, I would shake their hand and offer to take them out to a steak dinner. I mean, I think that this was perfectly fine that this happened. I'm glad that somebody was taking ownership of making sure that we were trying our best to get to the bottom of Donald Trump's web of opaque business connections.
He's glad about that. And Republicans this week going really heavy on the uranium story. This is about how American uranium or Canadian, but through America, ended up being in a deal with the Russians. This was Fox's Sean Hannity on Tuesday night saying the real collusion with Russia is around a theory linking Hillary and that 2010 sale of the uranium mining company Uranium One to the Russian to the Russians.
The media has been lying to you. They have been entirely wrong for almost a year, and that relates to the real Russia story. You do not want to miss a minute of tonight's program. Tonight we will prove how we've been right all along and ahead of the curve and how wrong they have been. We will lay it all out, all of the ugly details, and there's a ton of new information tonight. We have explosive information on the massive Uranium One scandal that the Obama administration attempted to cover up.
So talk there now of Clinton collusion, Trump collusion, the committee maybe melding these two. Jack Beattie, what do you see in this?
Well, this is a great talking point for the Republicans. It's their counter scandal, and it certainly should be looked into. But, you know, on the uranium matter, when you just look at it from the press clips, this was voted on by a committee of agencies of the government. The State Department had 1 of 9 votes on that committee to approve the sale. So if Hillary Clinton somehow were acting through the State Department, you know, to get this deal through, so Bill Clinton could get a donation from Uranium One. Well, she had to arrange with these eight other government agencies. It just seems to fall flat right there. But the dossier thing is a severe embarrassment, it seems to me, and it allows the Republicans to say, wait a minute. This British agent was talking to people in the Kremlin. Yes, he was. But if you take it that far, then you've got yourself the makings of a talking point scandal.
Lisa, where does this leave the collusion investigations on Capitol Hill? Are they really going anywhere now, or is it all up to Robert Mueller?
You know, it's back and forth. And I think the bottom line here is to watch the Senate intelligence investigation, where we think we'll get the most information, and then Robert Mueller, where we may get the most conclusions.
Well, what a week. I mean, just one after another. But there's another big one. And I want to express our gratitude to everybody here for helping us dig in. Lisa Desjardins with the PBS NewsHour with us from Columbia, South Carolina today. Thank you, Lisa.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Kyle Wingfield with me in Atlanta. Thank you so much for being here, Kyle.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jack, thanks as always.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. You bet. This is On Point.